I'm Anna Garcia, host of True Crime News, the podcast. Every week, we bring you in-depth coverage on cases making headlines, as well as those that go under the radar. Tune in for murders that defy explanation, mystery seeking exploration, and shocking secrets that will leave you breathless. Each week, we honor the victims by going beyond the salacious in our search for justice. Crime never stops. And neither do we. Listen to True Crime News, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The conversation around mental health has changed rapidly over the last couple of years. People are more comfortable sharing their mental health struggles and encourage others to do the same. Social media may provide safety in numbers, but it can also increase the stigma around mental illness. I'm WBBM News Radio's Rob Hart, and we're joined by Tracy Levine, Executive Director of the Naomi Ruth Cohen Institute for Mental Health Education, this week on At Issue. Let's talk a little bit about the history of the organization. What are the roots here?
So we were founded in 2000 by Larry and Marilyn Cohen, parents who lost their daughter Naomi to suicide after she had lived with a diagnosis of bipolar disorder. Her struggles ultimately led her to end her life. They originally did the things that they say everybody does. They planted a tree. They did things in memorial. And then after conversation with others, they decided that they wanted to do something to try to help reduce the stigma associated with mental illness and suicide. And they started by supporting the research and advocacy efforts of others. And then in 2002, they hosted their first annual community mental health conference. We just held our 24th conference this past Saturday. And in 2008, they joined with the Chicago School, then known as the Chicago School of Professional Psychology, to form the current institute. So the full name is the Naomi Ruth Cohen Institute for Mental Health Education at the Chicago School.
But the conversation around mental health has changed since 2008. And how can you chart that evolution over the last 18 years?
Oh, wow. So there are some that would say that stigma is worse today than it was 18 years ago. That with the 24/7 news cycles, social media, if something terrible happens 14 states away, we're going to know about it in the next 3 minutes. Sometimes coverage of events where we later discover that the person who was a perpetrator was struggling with mental health issues can lead people to believe that people with mental illness are dangerous, when in fact, they only account for about 4% of violent crime.
At the same time, though, it seems like just allowing people to connect, even virtually, gives them the opportunity to be more honest about their own mental health struggles when they might have kept it to themselves before. And also, that honesty can lead to better outcomes.
Absolutely. The part of the theme of our conference on Saturday was absolutely the importance of connection. And do the connections that you have meet your needs? Are they meaningful? If you haven't talked to somebody in a while, can you reach out? How do you let somebody know when you're feeling lonely, when you're struggling? Do you have someone in your life that you can reach out to that you know will respond to you non-judgmentally? All of those things can have an impact. I think some of the things we've seen generationally as well is how openly do people speak about mental health? If we look at some of our older generations and some of the language or terminology, you're off your rocker, you're going off the deep end, secrets you didn't talk about. Those things, people that hid their mental health issues or challenges because of the impact that it might have in their employment, in their day-to-day lives. And then I look at my daughter, who is a 20-something in her generation, and I see people more openly talking about mental health, about getting support, about the resources that might be available.
You bring up a very interesting point, especially in how we remember how previous generations may have talked or not talked about their mental health. Because if you go back a couple of generations, maybe you remember a grandparent who you thought was the strong, silent type, and maybe they did have some mental health crisis that was going on, and they expressed it in different ways. And now we're at a point where people are more honest or feel like they can talk more about what's going on. And
how do you have that conversation? Because there are successful ways of broaching the subject and there are unsuccessful ways of broaching the subject.
It starts with noticing and observing. You know, Rob, I've noticed you seem to be less engaged with us. I've noticed you're not having coffee with us anymore like you used to. Is there something going on? Finding ways to engage people when we start to struggle, it impacts our daily functioning, where we aren't enjoying things the way we used to enjoy them. We're not interacting with others the way that we used to interact. And if we notice that and observe that and ask people, hey, really, how are you? And not just I'm fine. Are we able to leverage those relationships? And that's something I talk about a lot in the programs that I do is you are the expert on your relationships. You are the expert on the people in your lives. Maybe this is someone that you can approach with humor and laughing and joking is appropriate. Maybe this is somebody that humor will cut them to the core. They need to be taken absolutely serious. So leveraging those relationships, leveraging those communication patterns in a way that feels real, authentic, genuine, all of the things that create that connection between yourself and that other individual.
Let's talk about that answer. I'm fine. And when someone says they are fine, they are decidedly not fine. And how can you ask a follow-up question? And how can you come up with different prompts, for lack of a better word, that won't make the person, the loved one you're talking to, more defensive?
So there's fine. You know what? I'm fine. It's a great day. Things are good at work. Things are good with the family. I really am fine. And then there's fine. I said I'm fine.
Yeah, that's what
I'm fine, right?
Yeah.
And again, is this someone that you can push where you can say, no, I don't think you are. You and I both know you're not fine. And I'm going to sit here with you and I'm going to help you and I'm going to support you and let's figure out what's going on with you. Or is this someone where you need to say, okay, I respect your boundary. I reserve the right to check on you again later or tomorrow or whatever to create that engagement. I had a student who shared with me a couple of years ago that fine stands for feelings I'm not expressing. So again, can we use humor and say, you know what? I've heard fine stands for feelings I'm not expressing. Is that what's happening right now? Tell me more.
And even as you point out, if someone says I'm fine in the I'm fine tone of voice, maybe they come back to you. Maybe they circle back after they feel different and they want to discuss the ways in which they are not fine.
Absolutely. We talk about the importance of consistent emotional support. If we say, hey, you know what? I'm going to call you tomorrow at 10. If you answer, you answer. If you don't, you don't. Call at 10, they don't answer. I'm going to do it again the next day and the next day. And eventually they're going to figure out, I'm going to call every day at 10 o'clock. Their choice, how they want to respond to that. And that's another thing we like to talk about is how empowering choices can be. A or B. B or C. Sometimes when someone is starting to feel hopeless or desperate or they just don't know which way to turn, saying, you know what, we can call this number or we can go to this location. We can start a chat or we can go online. Which one seems like it might be the best fit for what's going on with you right now?
The other natural inclination for a lot of people is to try to put someone else's crises in perspective. Oh, it's not that bad. Oh, you're catastrophizing something. So how could you potentially help someone put an event or events into their proper perspective without sounding like you're minimizing it or dismissing it?
Well, I think we all need to remember that what's important to me might not be important to you and vice versa. That depending on what our own lived experiences and background and all of the things that lead us to where we are at this point in our lives is going to be different. We talk about how no one can know exactly what someone else has experienced. And so saying something, you know, I went through something similar, would it be helpful for you to hear what I did in that situation. And in some cases, people are like, yes, please tell me, what was your experience? What did you do? What happened? Did it work? Because it helps normalize it for them. It helps them to feel like they're not alone. And that's a really important thing when we're talking about mental health, is normalizing that it's okay not to be okay.
Hey there, it's Jill Schlesinger. I'm launching a brand new show. It's called Money Moves. Follow and listen wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to At Issue on WBBM News Radio. I'm Rob Hart. We are talking with Tracy Levine, Executive Director for the Naomi Ruth Cohen Institute, about mental health treatment. When we talk about a mental health crisis that someone may be experiencing, people have a picture in their head of what that looks like, but a mental health crisis may come in different types and also in ways that may not be expected by the general public.
Sure. There is a full spectrum of how we might experience a mental health crisis. In some cases, it seems very obvious. People are behaving in a way that is so out of character and clearly concerning and maybe even becoming unsafe. And then there's the opposite, where people become very isolated, very withdrawn, and we're not aware, we're not noticing because they just aren't around us to be able to see what might be going on with them.
What are the most common mental health challenges that people face? Is it anxiety? Is it depression? Is it addiction? What's the most common type of mental health crisis out there?
Well, there is definitely a spectrum. Anxiety and depression are some of the most common experiences. Certainly substance use and addiction, and you get into which started first. Did somebody start feeling anxious and start using substances to try to help them overcome their anxiety or depression? Or is this someone that's been struggling with a substance use issue and it's starting to impact them in other ways that is impacting their mental health and their daily functioning? There are all kinds of diagnoses, and depending on age, depending on gender, that are impacting in different ways. Women are more likely to be diagnosed with depression than men. Men are more likely to die by suicide here in the U.S., up to 4 times more likely.
Is this a lifelong condition? If you do have a mental health crisis, or you are having some sort of mental health issue that requires treatment, is this something that's wired into your brain from birth, or is this something that can develop over the course of your life?
It's both. There are mental health conditions that are certainly influenced by genetics, development that we can be born with, that develop over time, that we may live with for a lifetime, as well as mental health challenges that may be shorter in duration, that require a shorter period of treatment. Somebody might be on an antidepressant or an anti-anxiety medication for a period of time. They're in treatment, they're in therapy, they start to feel better, they eventually maybe go off that medication. I actually have a friend who is diagnosed with bipolar disorder, and she drew a parallel for me that if she was diagnosed with diabetes, she would have to get her blood levels checked. She would have to take her insulin every day. She would live with this disease for the rest of her life. And she says, I'm bipolar. I take my medication. I get my blood levels checked. I will live with this disease for the rest of my life. But as long as I manage it, I can function normally.
You mentioned therapy. You also mentioned medication. And over the years, how has the insurance industry approach to both made mental health treatment much more accessible?
In some cases, for example, here in Illinois, we now have a requirement that insurance companies cover a preventative mental health visit, just like they would cover a preventative medical physical. And there have also been changes in some of the billing requirements, where different providers are now allowed to bill who previously weren't. And so those kinds of things have made, in theory, services more accessible. That said, there is a large shortfall of mental health providers nationwide. here in Illinois, even here in Chicago, where we have more services available than perhaps downstate or in more rural areas, that doesn't mean there are enough people to meet the need. And that's something that we're going to continue to see to be a challenge in the workforce and meeting the needs of people who need help over the next couple of years.
We talk about checking up on mental health as a peer or a friend or a relative. What if you're a parent and there are, and your child has a mental health crisis that you didn't know existed? Is that a different type of relationship? And what can you do as a parent? And also, what can you do if you're a child who's listening?
Well, if you're a child who's listening, my understanding is in the state of Illinois, if you're 14 or older, you can initially seek help and support without parental consent. Eventually, there's a limit to how many sessions can be held. I encourage people to learn more about that. For parents, it's finding those resources. What are the resources that might be available? Depending on the level of crisis, there are here in Illinois now we have Beacon, which is a resource for families to find services. When we talk about more concerning or challenging crises, there's 988, and that is the new number for the, and I say new, but it's been around, it'll be 4 years in July of this year, where I'm actually surprised how many people still don't know about 988 and that direct connection to the National Suicide Prevention Crisis and Lifeline. Anybody can call 988. You can call if you yourself are in crisis. You can call if you're concerned about someone and you want to receive guidance and support and ideas on how to find resources for that individual. We're very fortunate in that we have living rooms. Again, something a lot of people don't know about. They're like drop-in centers for people with mental health challenges and crises. Now, those aren't usually for anyone under the age of 18, but something adults should know about. Mobile crisis response units that are available to serve children and adults. It's really about finding what are the resources that are available in your community, and we can go to the DHS website and find those resources.
We kicked off the conversation by talking about the good and the bad of social media when it comes to the mental health conversation. The good side is that it encourages people to talk about mental health in a way that they had not done so before, because even though it's online, there is safety in digital numbers. At the same time, though, there is a digital content industry aided and abetted by a monetization formula that gives you more money for posting more viral videos. And unfortunately, someone's mental health crisis somewhere in the world can become fodder for that viral video machine. And if you are experiencing mental health difficulties yourself and you see a video like that take off, and then you look at comments from thousands of people around the world making fun of that person in this very vulnerable moment, what's your takeaway?
It's not my area of expertise, but we know that our young people can find social media positive, and certainly they experience the negative. That what you're describing essentially is cyberbullying. And when you experience that, it's anytime you start to feel less than, you feel desperate, you feel hopeless, you feel unseen, unwanted, unheard, those are all things that create risk, and risk of somebody who may think that the world would be better off without me. People don't want me here. And it's easy to go online and find out, how can I do this? How can I end my life? And that's where we really want people to be aware of resources like 988, of using the social media, online text numbers, websites like the Trevor Project for young people that have othered identities, LGBTQ, all kinds of resources that we hope people use that social media and online and internet for good.
You're listening to At Issue on WBBM News Radio. I'm Rob Hart. We are talking with Tracy Levine, Executive Director for the Naomi Ruth Cohen Institute. We're talking about mental health treatment today on the program. A number of states have adopted bans on the use of cell phones in schools, at least during school hours. And we're starting to get some research about how that cell phone ban, at least for 8 or 10 hours out of the school day, is actually having a positive impact on kids' mental health. And this is something that probably wasn't even considered when the foundation was getting off the ground in the first decade of the 21st century, but now it is very much a part of the life of children today. And it's a world where kids are more anxious, and it's a world where that constant, you know, plugging into content, you know, really does have an impact on developing brains. And, you know, what resources, or if any, that the foundation has to kind of address this very new phenomenon?
So NRCI, for short, isn't really, what we do is mental health education and training. So we are providing mental health first aid training, QPR suicide prevention, gatekeeper training. We do 1 hour lunch and learn programs. And so we provide training on helping to identify what might be normal behavior versus what might be concerning. We have trainings on trauma, on neurodiversity, on de-escalation. We have all kinds of programs that we put together based on what people are looking for, mental health in the workplace. When you talk about kids and cell phones, adults are just as guilty as of being on their phones
much. Oh, for sure.
And if you look at the icon or the logo from our conference this past Saturday, our theme was Alone Together, Confronting Loneliness Across the Lifespan. And it's two figures, both clearly on a device, sort of back to back. And how often do we see that? Do we see groups of young people hanging out together, but they're all face down looking at their phone, they're texting? You can go to a restaurant and see two adults and they're both on their phones. Where that can be helpful is if, for example, young people are part of a niche hobby and that's the way they can be connected with others that share similar interests. The same thing for adults. I have a neighbor who is very into weaving. She has looms and she's connected to people all over the country through that social media. But what happens when we become disconnected from the people who are right in front of us because we're looking at our device? One of the things I've started doing for self-care is screen-free Sundays, which means TV screens and movie screens are exempt. I can still lay on the couch and watch TV if that's what I want to do. But I try to stay away from my computer screen. I try to put my phone down somewhere and actually go about my day device-free. And it has a shift for me. And that's something I have found to be effective. The need to check your phone, to be on your phone. It is. It's an addiction. It's hard once you start, even there, if they're cute videos, you find yourself losing time. In our training sessions, I often, if it's a full day training, I'll give the lunchtime challenge where I tell the group, you've got 5 minutes to check your phone, email, text messages, voicemails, do what you need to do. But then I challenge you to spend the rest of the 25 minutes device-free, resting your brain, nurturing your body, talk about anything except work. And initially, I get this room full of panicked faces. But when they come back and I say, okay, who succeeded with the lunchtime challenge? The people that did are like, that feels totally different. I'm going to actually start doing that. And that's where we find that taking that break, giving our brain the rest, switching from a computer screen to a phone screen doesn't allow our brain to rest. Giving our brain that rest lets us come back up to 40% more task focused, more productive, more able to complete what we need to complete. And so those are some of the things that I've learned. I will admit sometimes not so good at practicing what I preach, but I try.
I do want to ask you about some of the different types of training the foundation conducts, especially when it comes to trauma, because there are different types of trauma. And so what does that training curriculum address?
So depending on the program, if we are focusing on children and childhood trauma, we'll look at how those childhood traumas can start to manifest in mental health challenges and what those behaviors might look like. And again, what's the difference between normal developmental behavior? Is, you know, it's normal for teenagers to be kind of disruptive. When we look at adults, how, when we talk about mental health in the workplace, how are the things that we carry into work, what those might look like, how those might impact our work, how we may carry traumas through life. When I look, again, we talked earlier about the older generations, and you think about people who've lived through wars, who've lived through refugee trauma, immigrant trauma, what are the things that might impact them as they are going through their day-to-day lives? So there's a lot of different things that can definitely play into that.
And then also as a parent, you know that your kids are watching just what goes on. And, you know, how can you as a parent react to crises or react to bad things that happen or just react to whatever life throws at you in such a way that it doesn't create a lasting impact on your children, too? I feel like COVID was a very good example of how you can cope with a crisis and try to do so in a way that it wouldn't permanently affect your children, who in my cases were all very young when it happened.
It is important, and again, as we go across the lifespan, if we can show our children that unconditional love, the ability to admit when we're struggling, to say, you know what, I'm not having my best day right now, I'm not my best self, I need a mommy timeout. With older kids, one of the things, and this was my own experience, is if our kids aren't talking to us, who are they talking to? It's normal for teenagers not to talk to their parents about the things that they are most struggling with. Do they have a trusted adult? Is it a teacher? Is it a coach? Is it one of their friends' parents? And if we know who that trusted adult is, one trusted adult can have up to 40% of a positive impact on what's going on with a young person.
And then lastly, we'll circle back to the importance of listening. And how important is it and how impactful is it to actually check in on somebody?
I don't think that could be overstated how important that is, especially our older adults. The more isolated they become, maybe they've had medical issues, mobility issues, they may have lost a life partner. Those are individuals that we definitely want to more mindfully check on, where they may feel like, you know what, I've lived my life, I'm done. Other people that maybe have experienced any kind of emergency, when we think about fires, floods, tornadoes, people who've had losses of any kind, relationship breakups, checking in, hey, how you doing? Job losses. And we talk about the economy. We talk about what's happening with the job market. If people are experiencing layoffs, what is happening with them? And checking in. And maybe they don't want to talk about it, but letting them know that we're here for them, or that, hey, here's some resources. And I've had people ask me, well, you know what? What if they won't take 988? What if they won't take this list of resources that I have for them? You know what? If you can text it to them or email it to them, it's up to them whether or not they do anything with the information.
Tracy Levine, Executive Director of the Naomi Ruth Cohen Institute for Mental Health Education, thank you for joining us this week on At Issue. If you want to hear the program again, you can do so at WBBMNewsRadio.com, the Odyssey app, and the iHeartRadio app. Join us next week for another edition of At Issue. Until then, I'm Rob Hart, News Radio 105.9 WBBM.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, real people tell their stories live on stage.
I burst into tears. And I wasn't sure if I was crying because I hadn't been kissed in a really long time or if I had just never been kissed like that before.
To hear fascinating, heartbreaking, and sometimes hilarious stories from astronauts, teachers, farmers, and people just like you, follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.
Girl, let's get real. Some pads are just diapers with a good PR team, but not the new Kotex BioCare. That's because Kotex BioCare helps defend against odor and irritants. And it's the first and only pad with this pH proactive system that helps optimize the pad's pH. Just think of it as self-care for down there. Check out Kotex.com for more details on the all-new Kotex, completely redesigned to meet your needs. You asked, we heard.
Hey, it's Jen Hatmaker. Here's what I've learned in midlife. Joy isn't the reward you earn after all the work is done. Joy is the work. That's what this new series on For the Love is all about. The sacred, yes. It's choosing delight, rest, and pleasure on purpose. Because saying yes to yourself, that's the thing that finally lets you fill your table with everybody else. Come find your sacred yes with me. Follow and listen to For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.